welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, reporting here from Washington, D.C., and as usual, a lot of material to report on and cover today. It looks like the Anglo-Americans think, and I stress think, they have a chance for a color revolution or CIA people power coup in Iran. A hysterical statement from Barkey this morning. We are excited to see robust debate in the Iranian election campaign. And Barkey is taking credit for everything in advance. My speech in Cairo, says Barkey, my speech in Cairo will be the cause if the regime in Iran can be overthrown. Let's see. We have statements from the Pasdaran Revolutionary Guard who indicate that they are well aware of what's going to happen. So it'll be interesting to see if a color revolution or people power coup of the CIA, MI6, and related Western intelligence agencies is possible in Iran under these conditions. And we'll get to that in just a minute. But let's now shift into the struggle front, the domestic political struggle here in the United States around economics is our leading topic. And in particular, California. I had the opportunity to be in California last week. That was the reason we went with a classic best of World Crisis Radio broadcast. So when you go to California, you are visiting ground zero in the budget crisis that is now afflicting all the states. Interesting. Bush destroyed New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Obama is destroying the entire Midwestern industrialized area, starting with Detroit and all of the subcontractors, and a place like California. Look, with Obama, it's destruction and devastation on a much vaster scale, mediated, of course, through Schwarzenegger and other tools of finance capital. So what do you do about California? And, of course, with a few small changes, you could apply this to any state. Needless to say, to go around talking about the free market gets you absolutely nowhere. To go around inveighing against big government makes you a tool and a stooge of the bankers who are cutting the budget because they don't want to pay. They want that money to go to the bonded debt. The bondholders have to get the money, they say, not the welfare victims or sick children. So what you need is a draft emergency action program for your state, in this case, California. Let's use California as a case study. What is it that you should demand? The basic principle of this is class consciousness. In other words, there are bankers and there are you. And these are the fundamental classes that are confronting each other. So the goal is to shift the cost of the world economic depression to those who created it. In other words, elementary justice. The bankers created the depression with their derivative speculation and other kinds of speculation and deindustrialization. It is therefore the cost that will be visited on them. So shift the cost of the current crisis off the backs of the people and off the poor and onto the parasitical banking interests, and in particular the derivatives bankers and assorted zombie bankers. So what are your demands? First of all, number one, no layoffs of state employees. Restore and maintain vital services at all costs. You've got to maintain your electric grid, police, fire, highways, public health, education. Water deliveries to California farmers are a big deal, as well as water deliveries to communities. What has to be applied here is the Nuremberg precedents. The United States manufactured these, and therefore they should be respected, and they are in many ways a permanent achievement of world civilization, whatever the flaws that would be inherent in this. But today let's treat them as a moral and a political standard. If you deprive a civilian population of food, clothing, shelter, and medical care, for whatever reason, you say, well, this is economics, so we don't want to default on our debt. That's a high crime against humanity. This was dealt notoriously, very harshly, dealt with very harshly at Nuremberg. And what you're looking at today, Schwarzenegger says that California is 50 days away from total collapse, which I think what he means by that is default. Now, default is not the end of the world at the level of a state. A debt moratorium might be a good thing at the end of the day, but let's see how we can do other measures that might be more instructive. But certainly the notion of a debt moratorium, that is a permanent freeze on interest and principal payments on the California bonded debt, is a perfectly legitimate kind of option, and this has been done by various countries, by Brazil, by Argentina, as well as by many, many American states. After crazy old Andrew Jackson and Martin Van Buren, his right-hand man, destroyed the Bank of the United States, of course, you had the massive Panic of 1837, which bankrupted a whole bunch of states, including such leading ones as Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York. They seem to have survived. I'm sure California will, too. Because, remember, your wealth is not your credit rating. We've seen how ridiculously corrupt and stupid these credit rating agencies are. It's your trained workforce. So that's the other big provision. When you're dealing with the California budget crisis, don't do anything to destroy, undermine the health and well-being of your workforce. Because that human capital, that mental capital, the trained workforce of California is the source of all wealth. As Abraham Lincoln once said, labor is independent of and prior to capital. The source of all capital is labor. That's right. The only way you get a locomotive or a machine tool or any other capital good is by having labor manufacture it. Now, the centerpiece of the program for California right now is we have the assorted parliamentary cretins in Sacramento, and they're talking about how they're going to cut off all welfare payments to welfare victims. They're going to cut education. They're going to do a series of suicidal, destructive acts of vandalism on a mass scale. The centerpiece is a Tobin tax, a securities transfer tax. Call it a sales tax for financiers and oligarchs. Of course, Tobin, James Tobin, the distinguished economics professor of Yale, I believe a Nobel Prize winner at one point, maybe not. Anyway, who cares about that? Who cares what a bunch of reactionary Swedes might think? It's the Tobin tax, a securities transfer tax on all derivatives and speculation. And people ask, well, you're calling for the wipeout of derivatives. Certainly, derivatives wipeout is the goal. This can, however, be done at the federal level. What a state can do is tax derivatives. And this is in some ways even more instructive. In California, as a result of recent measures, the sales tax paid by the average person is approaching 9% in most parts of the state, in the neighborhood of 9%. This is a regressive tax. This is the kind of tax you do not want. Of course, a poll tax, a flat fee, is even worse. But 9% on purchases of shoes, clothing, things like this, household goods, that's outrageous. So that's what the people pay. Now, when we turn to the San Francisco banking district and we see places like Wells Fargo and related banks, what do they pay, pray tell, on their derivatives, stocks, bonds, foreign exchange currency, commodity speculation as they drive up the price of oil and gas? They pay nothing, zero. There is a huge stream of wealth, of securities, of derivatives above all, which is not taxed at all. We simply say, let the bankers pay their fair share, 1% Tobin tax, securities transfer tax, on all financial turnover paid by the broker. Back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley reporting from Washington, D.C., and addressing the California crisis and, by extension, really all state budget crises. This is a 9-point program distributed this weekend at the Conspiracy Conference in Santa Clara, California, this past weekend, and posted also at actindependent.org. It's up at Rents, many, many other websites by now in the meantime. So this is an action program with hopefully action struggle up to the point of a general strike, a mass strike, to back it up. Because when the bankers come and propose to strip you and flay you alive, what do? You fight back. You're not an Austrian. You fight bankers. You don't stand around complaining about big government. You get out there and fight for your economic rights, because people do have economic rights, and they've got to assert them. So therefore, every state needs a 1% Tobin tax on derivatives and speculation. Most states have some kind of regressive tax. It's often a sales tax. This is disastrous tax policy. You need progressive taxation. That's most easily done in the area of income tax. But the worst kinds of taxes are these things like sales tax. This is why oligarchs like them, because they pay much less. Therefore, we look around for flows of wealth which are untapped and untaxed, and we find speculative activity, derivatives, stocks, bonds, options, futures. These are, of course, derivatives, foreign currency, commodity speculation, all kinds of things that you want to discourage in any case. Cancerous, fictitious, bloated derivatives and other kinds of paper claims on production. So in California, 9% sales tax approximately for the people. You want to buy your kid a pair of shoes, you pay 9%. The banker wants to send through $10 billion of derivatives. What does he pay? So far, zero. This is inequitable. This is one-sided. Makes no sense. This is the result of 40 years of reactionary Republican policy, by and large, right? When the Republicans had the White House 7 out of 10 times, and the Democrats were not that great. So therefore, we're left with this kind of a situation. So 1% Tobin tax, 1% securities transfer tax on all financial transactions inside your state, in this case California, to be paid by the broker. In other words, the institutional investor, be that the buyer or the seller, makes no difference. The institutional investor, once identified, pays. Now, of course, the bankers will howl. The bankers will say, well, we'll leave California. Well, obviously, this is one point where it helps to have many states doing it, but no banker is going to deprive himself of the possibility of looting and sacking and exploiting the eighth largest economy in this case. So that's the securities transfer tax. Now, another thing you could do and should consider, foundations. Foundations represent a huge mass of undertaxed wealth, and they are used largely for social manipulation, to cause trouble, to foment racial conflict, to support all kinds of ideologues. We've just had the foundation-funded racist ideologue Reverend Jeremiah Wright come back on the horizon this past week. That guy is foundation-funded. His church has within it individuals who have been funded by the Ford Foundation. Therefore, branches of these foundations in various states should be hit with some kind of a surtax. How about a 10% surtax? This time on their assets, on their holdings, not their income, but what they own, their endowment. Foundation endowments should get a 10% surtax for the duration of the crisis. So there's a way to plug the budget gap. Foreclosures, point two. Every state, starting with California, should impose a freeze, a halt, a stop on all foreclosures by law, not voluntary, but obligatory, and with jail terms backing it up. The primary residence of an American family is sacrosanct. Nobody but nobody kicks you out for reasons of financial non-payment in the middle of a world depression, because otherwise you are threatening the fabric of civilization itself. This also goes for farms, businesses, transportation, by that I mean trucking companies, taxi companies, any other activity, the classic restaurant, dry cleaner, or other local service. Anything productive, anything socially necessary, no foreclosures for 5 years or for the duration of this world economic depression, whichever lasts longer. All the details of repayment and so forth can be worked out later, but what you cannot do is destroy civilization in the meantime and then figure out the payments. We've also got Obamavilles sprouting up. California is a very big state for Obamavilles. Obamavilles, of course, the tent cities, the new Hoovervilles. What used to be called a Hooverville is now an Obamaville, and they are growing, and they will surpass and eclipse anything that happened under Herbert Hoover, because this blasé elitist in the White House is even less interested in the plight of the American people. Actually, he has an active hostility compared to Hoover, whatever Hoover thought. So stop all foreclosures. And again, the bankers will howl. They'll go to court. Fine, fight them in the courts. Give, in this case, Jerry Brown. The Attorney General of California is Jerry Brown. Jerry, get out there and fight to stop foreclosures. Okay, take a look at your Catholic social doctrine. It says that property rights are not absolute, but are relative to social responsibility. In other words, social responsibility has got to come in and temper and mitigate that harsh Calvinist stuff about property rights. Now, another thing you can do, how about interest rates? You've got people now who are getting ripped off to the tune of 30% interest on their credit cards as the zombie bankers collapse inevitably into bankruptcy. They're, of course, determined to take as many people with them as they can. So as they go down, what they're doing is jacking up the interest rates on credit cards. Now, once upon a time, before trilateral puppet Jimmy Carter seized the White House with the accompanying damage then done by Paul Adolf Volcker, the other trilateral member who was given control of the Federal Reserve, we used to have something called usury laws. States had usury laws, which would simply say that the maximum interest rate that can be charged on transactions within the state was usually 10%. Now, of course, as Volcker jacked up the federal prime rate, the Federal Reserve prime rate, illegally and unaccountably and unconstitutionally, as we know, that blew out the state usury laws. You can read about this in Surviving the Cataclysm, your guide through the worst financial crisis in human history, Surviving the Cataclysm, available from progressivepress.com, www.progressivepress.com, or if you prefer, amazon.com now has the Surviving the Cataclysm. So what you ought to do is reimpose that, set a 10% upper limit on interest rates, and with that you've given people relief because you've lowered their interest rate on the credit card. Back in a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley reporting from Washington, D.C. Just going through the emergency program for California and other states now in budget crisis. Number one, no layoffs. Restore and maintain vital services at all costs. And remember the Nuremberg precedents for those who violate this. A Tobin tax or securities transfer tax, 1% state by state on all derivatives and speculative flows of money paid by the broker, paid by the institutional side of the transaction. Number three, stop all foreclosures on primary residences, farms, businesses, transportation, and any other productive or socially necessary activity. A 10% usury law should be reimposed. Now, they'll come forward and say, oh, well, that's not possible anymore. After the Volcker era, there's some legislation back there. Fight it. Give your state attorney general something to do. Go to the Supreme Court. Fight, fight, fight. And remember that these decisions are ultimately going to be political. Now, the TARP. This past week, we've had some banks. J.P. Morgan Chase. We've got Goldman Sachs. We've got Morgan Stanley, American Express, and a few others, right? They have paid back $68 billion of the TARP. That's not even, that is not all the TARP money that these bums have been given. And, of course, it doesn't say anything about the $12 trillion that they have been able to draw on from the Federal Reserve. This is just the Treasury money, and, of course, that's the lesser part of it. Outrageous, of course, but the lesser part in terms of magnitude. Notice Citibank and Bank of America didn't make the cut. Citibank and Bank of America have paid back nothing, so they are in big trouble. And, of course, what you see here is the functioning of the fascist corporate state, that state-sponsored compulsory cartel, to drive down wages, drive down production, and prop up fictitious capital, fictitious paper. The chosen winners, clearly enough, are J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and perhaps a few others, Bank of New York Mellon, maybe also on the winners list. But what this does not cover, this is the least of it, because even if $70 billion has been paid back on the TARP, or and this is preferred shares that are being cashed in, sold back to the government, or the government given back, that does not cover this money to AIG. Remember, AIG Insurance Company, not a bank, through their London hedge fund, sold $3 trillion of derivatives, and that is what the most money has gone into on the Treasury TARP, on the bailout from October of last year. And in particular, Société Générale of France were then paid this money on derivatives contracts by AIG. So AIG gets $200 billion almost from the Treasury and then proceeds to do the following to wind down derivatives transactions. Société Générale of France gets $12 billion. Deutsche Bank of Germany gets $12 billion. Barclays Bank of Britain gets $8.5 billion. Union Bank of Switzerland, $5 billion. It's about $37 billion. This is enough to plug the California budget right now. Why is it, oh, Schwarzenegger, Obama ruling elite, that Société Générale, Deutsche Bank, Barclays Bank, and Union Bank of Switzerland, all foreign zombie bankers, derivatives merchants and hedge fund hyenas, how come they are more important than the survival of the population of California? How can we do this? You got to demand the clawback of that $37 billion and the application of it to the budget deficits of the states. So time to impeach Geithner in particular, right? A big state like California, with Pelosi and Feinstein and Boxer and Waxman and all those influential members of Congress, impeach Geithner. Get him out. He transferred $37 billion to AIG and then on to the foreign banks. You can probably impeach Bernanke on that same thing. And, of course, Bernanke should disgorge his papers. Why doesn't Jerry Brown of California start seizing the assets of Société Générale, Deutsche Bank, Barclays, and UBS to call public attention to this and to begin clawing back some of these funds? So there's another possibility. Now, generally speaking, what we need, as we've talked about in the past, if you can nationalize the Federal Reserve all at once, that's good. What you can do, though, is nationalize it step by step. And that would be force Bernanke to open up a 0% Main Street lending window for productive businesses. Up to now, the entire $12 trillion of credit lines made available by the Federal Reserve goes only to financial institutions, to the parasites, in effect. That is, banks, stockbrokers now disguised as banks, credit card companies, money market mutual funds, and so forth, all paper stuff. There's no money from the Federal Reserve for production, nothing for auto, nothing for Silicon Valley, nothing for biotech, nothing for agriculture, nothing for anybody. And, of course, all these companies that are going bankrupt are going bankrupt because the banks refuse to lend. So, therefore, you have your own bank. Nationalize the Federal Reserve, open up a 0% emergency Main Street lending window and forced the Fed to rediscount commercial paper from local businesses that have been submitted in through the regional and local banking system. Now, that would be the way to restart lending. You want to restart lending? Restart lending. Don't say that you're giving money to zombie bankers and hope that they restart lending. That's obviously ridiculous. So, another point, the seventh point, every state has got to come up with a big project of infrastructure. I would say these can be limited because what you really want is a pilot project here. The really big money is going to come from the federal government and indeed from the nationalized Federal Reserve in the form of loans. But if you look at California, it's a natural. A magnetic levitation railway, a maglev, high-speed rail, modern high-speed rail from south to north. So start at San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, up on towards Portland and Seattle, and of course the southern extension of the thing goes towards Mexico City and on to Latin America. Now these are super speed railways. This is more than 300 miles an hour. This is not steel wheel on steel rail. This is everything floating on a magnetic cushion. The Chinese and the Japanese have them. The Germans can build them. The U.S. is nowhere, as usual. We're back here with windmills and with bridges that fall down. This is now the junkyard and rubble field of the post-industrial society, a mockery, an obscene joke by Obama and his Malthusian controllers. So how could California do this? Well, one way is issue some bonds, get the money in. You can stimulate the sales of your bonds by saying anybody who buys these bonds now in the crisis can ride free on the maglev for life or as long as you hold the bonds, something like this. And you can, of course, create something like a California Development Bank and put that the proceeds from the bonds go into that bank, and then you use your reserve ratio to multiply the availability of the loans, and you make that then into a revolving credit facility, lending out the same money again and again and again as it comes in. One obvious thing is if your state has General Motors or Chrysler plants that have been shut down and closed, and therefore you have unemployed workers, the most elementary, the most obvious thing in the world is if you have empty factories and unemployed workers, get some credit in there, get some industrial engineering-oriented management, and put the unemployed workers back into the factories and start producing something that you need. In this case, you could reconvert those plants to build maglev, and once you're finished with your California maglev, you can start making them for export and start an economic recovery that way. A pilot project of this type. We'll be back in a minute on World Crisis Radio.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. So in order to fight the depression, and depressions have to be fought, you don't capitulate to depressions in the Austrian manner. We're not liquidationists here in the tradition of Andrew Mellon, Heinrich Brüning, and others. You got to fight depression. So you fight the depression by building an ultra-modern, super-speed, north-south Pacific maglev from San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, on to Portland and Seattle. This is a permanent addition to the capital stock of that part of the U.S. and a permanent enhancement to the productivity of labor, meaning look at all those saved man hours and look at the speed you can get by using the maglev for freight. Freight, obviously, a big consideration. So these are the choices you have to make. The Chinese and the Japanese are moving ahead. The Germans know how to make these things. And the U.S. is nowhere, as usual, falling behind into decadence and despair. So it's time to get these things out and build them. reconvert auto plants as a part of the strategy. And finally, again, if the bankers and politicians are really so ideological and so insane that they can't do any of these things, then it's time to agitate for a general debt moratorium, a permanent freeze on all bonded debt. You default. States can default. It's happened before. It'll happen again. Not the end of the world. And if the bankers don't want that, then let them be reasonable and call off their lobbying myrmidons from Sacramento, from Washington, D.C., and elsewhere. If they insist on sabotaging every rational and reasonable solution to the crisis, then they're going to get the worst. The Latin Americans have done this before, right, when the Argentinians declared a debt moratorium with Rodriguez Sá back in 2000-2001. Then under Kirchner, Argentina fared much better as a result of that debt moratorium because it put the bankers on the spot. And when you're a big debtor, you acquire leverage over the lender, and California certainly qualifies. And, of course, what are you going to do in general? It's time for struggle. It's time for general strike, mass strike, wildcat strikes, other kinds of actions to fight back against austerity. If you have militant unions, if you have nurses, public employees, teachers, and others, they've got to be warned that if you don't fight now, if you sit around like certain Germans in 1933 waiting for somebody's order to go out and demonstrate, it may be too late. So it's time for struggle. It's high time for struggle around a program like this. The big thing is to know what to demand. All kinds of labor ferment. The London subway, the underground, is shut down right now. Do those guys know what to demand? I haven't looked into their demands, but it's very often the case that you get really militant struggles going on and the demands don't get you anywhere, and therefore the strike does not spread, does not get you support from the unemployed and the underemployed and from the public in general. And therefore, with the ruling elite controlling the mass media, then you're isolated, you're surrounded, and then your agitation is crushed. So don't fall for any of that. Draft emergency action program for California. And again, that Tobin tax, that security transfer tax, who should pay for the crisis? The bankers, the hedge fund people, and the rest of them should pay for the crisis. And we want a progressive outcome, building the Pacific maglev that would then allow the U.S. to leapfrog over these other countries and turn the tremendous backwardness now in the U.S. into an advantage by going from the technology of the 19th century to the technology of the 21st century. Now, sticking with economics for a minute, we've talked about the payback of the TARP by some of these banks. Of course, the $12 trillion to the Fed is largely out there. There are also about $5 or $6 billion of warrants, that is the ability to buy shares of stock, which these banks are trying to get back from the Treasury. So don't believe it if people say, well, now the banks are off the hook. They are not. The thank you from these same banks and hedge funds is to have now driven the price of oil up to above $75 a barrel, and we'll check the actual price here momentarily, but it's above $75 a barrel, and that, of course, is all pure speculation. Everybody knows it. It has nothing to do with supply and demand. Demand is depressed because of the depression, and therefore, this is a complete fraud. The only way to deal with that is government action, re-regulation, position limits, 100% margin requirements, and a systematic distinction between the speculator on the one hand and the user, end user, and or hedger on the other. Here's an interesting statistic. The lifeblood of the world economy is world trade. Now, you go to the WTO of all people, the World Trade Organization. They have statistics. They just had on May 18th to 19th, they had Data Day in the United Nations International Bureaucracy. How interesting. What we find here is that world trade, understood as total world exports, this is how they measure it, peaked at a level of about 180 on their index between the second quarter and the third quarter of 2008. That is to say, If the first quarter of 2005 was 100, we got up to 180 in world trade on their index between the second and third quarters of last year, 2008. But then a very, very sharp decline set in, the biggest drop since World War II. And the result is, you look at their graph, you've got a fall of about 35 to 40% as of the first quarter of 2009. So January, February, March of 2009, we have a 35 to 40% decline of world trade total merchandise exports worldwide in current U.S. dollars. Now, that obviously better to use physical units, but this is what we have. We have current U.S. dollars. So therefore, a breathtaking, shocking, stunning contraction of world trade just between the second and third quarters of 2008 when the peak was reached, and then the first quarter of 2009. The official statistic, they say, is the first quarter of 2009 compared to the first quarter of 2008 is down 31%. But, of course, that doesn't give you the full magnitude of the fall. I'm convinced that the actual fall is in the neighborhood of 40% as of the end of the first quarter. Now, what else do we know? After that, Germany, the biggest exporter in Europe and probably in many ways the most export-dependent country in the world and therefore the best barometer for the world economic situation, German exports down 30% in the month of April. So that's now after the first quarter that we've been talking about here with WTO. German exports down almost one-third in the month of April of 2009. The contraction of world trade is the most ominous, the most generalized symptom of a world economic depression of incalculable proportions. A killer depression is coming in. Don't believe the nonsense on bubble vision there, CNBC or Fox Business News or whatever bubble vision you may watch. The world economy continues to contract massively. Unemployment is growing. We have Barkey, right, with his dazzling smile, right? Barkey, the telegenic demagogue, says that he's creating or saving or creating 600,000 jobs. Well, it's down. It's about half a million jobs lost per month. And how you calculate saved jobs, this, of course, is anybody's guess. This is like mark to model. You can make that say anything you want. And of course, Barkey now says it's time for PAYGO. Yeah. In other words, in his view, after Wall Street got everything they wanted, and that's all been dished out, now it's time for austerity for you, the little guy. And therefore, he's coming after your health care with rationing, and he's coming after you with cap and trade super tax to please Al Gore and Prince Charles and other titled oligarchs and wealthy elitists. We'll be back in a minute here on World Crisis Radio. Crisis Radio, our usual guest coming up here in just a minute, Phil Berg. Let's just give a quick rundown on some interesting developments on the birth certificate front. That is Obama really the president of the United States, or is he disqualified? We had Limbaugh in one of his few moments of lucidity in the midst of various babblings about free market economics and anti-government right-wing anarchist ranting, a useful moment by Limbaugh. The joke was, what does Obama have in common with God? Answer, God doesn't have a birth certificate either. We've also got the neocons over at WorldNet Daily coming back with more focus on the birth certificate. So some ferment around this, and maybe a sign that that Obama's spell and the hysteria is breaking up after 5 months in office. So let me welcome Phil Berg in Philadelphia, who's going to report to us now on important developments in the litigation and legal action on the birth certificate front. Welcome, Phil.
Welcome, Webster. My pleasure speaking to you. I have breaking news for everyone here that the sealed case has now been unsealed. Unfortunately, it's been unsealed because the judge dismissed the case. But the significance of this case, and I just put out a press release to this effect, is that U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder refuses to prosecute President Obama under the False Claims Act, whereby Obama was accused of defrauding the U.S. Treasury by illegally being a U.S. senator from Illinois, as we claim Obama is an illegal alien and not a U.S. citizen. I had brought action against Obama, and after months of delay, Holder's staff refused to investigate. I raised the issue of conflict of interest because the Attorney General and U.S. Attorney's Office, all their boss is Barack Obama, and I also asked why the discovery, which they supposedly received in making their determination not to proceed, was not turned over. So the case was dismissed just this past Tuesday by Judge Roberts, who stated that he had no discretion because the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is over him, has decided that the judges here should have no input. Now, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, in California, has decided that since the statute provides for a hearing, that the court should have input. So we're going to be appealing this case, but I think it's an out-and-out disgrace. I hope everyone goes to our website, takes this press release and spreads it. Hopefully someone in the national media will pick it up, even though I doubt it. I think it was good that Rush Limbaugh spoke about it. I'd love to get on his show if there's anyone out there that can hook me up with them. But I think I've worded this properly. I think it's a total disgrace. If he is an illegal alien, as I stated, the sealed case, usually a sealed case is for the False Claims Act, is dealt with Medicaid or Medicare fraud. But that's why I couldn't discuss it since I filed the action last November, November 7th, 2008. But now the case is unsealed. Everyone can go to our website. They can get a copy of the court term and number on the case and look it up and read all the details of what we presented to the court and what we presented actually to the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Attorney General. And I think it's a disgrace that they're not moving forward on this. And my commitment, again, is to stay committed to find out the truth about Obama. I definitely think he's an illegal alien. I definitely think he stole money, because if he's an illegal alien, he could not have drawn salary for U.S. Senator, and he should not be president. And you have my commitment to keep pursuing this action. I just need people's help. I need people to step forward. I need people to spread it to everyone else on their address book. I needed to get more and more people involved, and then also if anyone can make a contribution. We're now in our 11th month pursuing this.
So, Phil, let me just sum up the details. Here we were in the Federal District Court in the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., that building at the foot of Capitol Hill where so many things have happened over the years. So this is Judge Roberts, Federal District Judge, saying that he will not go further into this question of the sealed case that you've been telling us about for several months now. Is Obama an illegal alien? Did he falsely take his payments, right, the salary he earned as a U.S. senator? And for that, you have to be a U.S. citizen. So does that apply retroactively? And you tell me that there was a representative there of the Attorney General, Eric Holder, and they declined to investigate. They're just not interested in enforcing the laws. They're not going to take care that these laws be enforced, or this constitutional provision. So it's Eric Holder once again, and people remember him. This is Mark Rich's advocate inside the Clinton administration in the last days, right, when he made sure that a pardon went to Mark Rich, the wealthy, malefactor, who was an international fugitive, at least from the U.S. point of view at the time. So that's Eric Holder, right?
Absolutely, and I think it's a total disgrace. Judge Roberts basically said his hands are tied. I'm going to appeal it to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals and hopefully convince them that the statute, I mean, think about it for a minute. The statute provides that you either have a closed meeting with the representatives from the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Justice Department or a hearing. Well, obviously, I didn't want a closed hearing with them, a closed meeting with them, because it wouldn't do anything. So I have it on the record. We're going to get the transcript of it. We'll have that posted up on our website. But Judge Roberts states that he has no input. He cannot overrule, do anything. But think about it. The statute provides that there can be a court hearing. So if there can be a court hearing, why wouldn't the court have input on it? It just doesn't make sense. And hopefully the D.C. Court of Appeals, people can start writing to them that they should hear this case. They should change their mind and follow the Ninth Circuit and several other circuits around this country. And it's an out-and-out disgrace what's going on here. But there are more and more people talking, even though they're joking about it. It's more and more people are talking about this birth certificate. Now, WorldNet Daily is putting up a sign campaign saying, where's your birth certificate? ObamaCrimes.com, which is my website, ObamaCrimes.com. We're going further if we can raise the money, and it costs a lot, because I don't think, and I called WorldNet Daily and spoke to them, I don't think where's your birth certificate catches on for people that aren't committed or don't know about this topic. I think you need a definite thing, and our signs will say, Obama, where's your birth certificate? You can't go where's your birth certificate and hope people are going to start inquiring and think what's going on. So that's our theory. We're going to pursue Obama, where's your birth certificate?
Absolutely.
We're going to need thousands and thousands of dollars, and hopefully we can raise it, because this issue has to come to a head. If we can raise the public awareness to 50 or 75 million, then I really believe that we can pressure and make him do something. One, at the White House briefing about a week and a half ago, the press secretary Gibbs was asked a question, and he like scoffed it off. But the issue is there. We have to get it out more and more. And I think as Obama is dropping in the polls, or will be dropping in the polls, because his plans and his ideas are not catching on, and I think people are starting to get disillusioned, then when the public finds out that he's not qualified to be in office, I think we have a real shot of bringing this thing to a head.
I was at this conference in California over the weekend, and this was attended by George Noory, who is the host of the Coast to Coast AM broadcast, right? And then he's sort of the nighttime equivalent of one of the big talk shows, right? And he's got a network of 550 stations. His line was, whoever's running against Obama the next time around should bring a copy of their own vault copy birth certificate to the debates and say, here's my birth certificate. I wonder if candidate Obama would like to honor us with his birth certificate. So this is specific. We're not interested in birth certificates in general. We want Obama's, right? And this is an uncertain trumpet. Hang on, Phil. We'll be back in 1 second.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley here in Washington, and we're speaking by phone with Phil Berg, the distinguished lawyer from Philadelphia, who has just been in another skirmish with the Obama administration here. Eric Holder, the U.S. Attorney General, refuses to investigate whether Obama is indeed a natural-born citizen qualified for the presidency. Phil, I think you said that your case included a demand for a special prosecutor. Am I right?
No. During my argument, I said to His Honor, I said, if you don't think it's sufficient material here for you to grant me to handle this case as the relator, perhaps you should appoint a special prosecutor to review the material without any input from the Attorney General or Department of Justice because of a conflict of interest. Of course, that wasn't ruled on, and the Department of Justice just ignored me on that. But there's definitely a conflict of interest here, and I think it needs a special prosecutor. And we're going to keep pursuing this because this is outrageous. I mean, think about it. Not only would he have taken salary, his expenses also would be have to come back to the U.S. Treasury. So we're talking about close to $1 million. And again, the suit I had pending had only dealing with his U.S. Senate seat, not with the presidency. Of course, it would have ramifications for the presidency, but that's why we just filed it on the U.S. Senate. And it's, I think, an out-and-out disgrace. And we put out a press release. Hopefully it'll get spread. Hopefully someone will pick it up out there. And we appreciate people spreading the word on that. And if anyone can make a contribution to us, we could really do it. But even more important than the money right now is spreading the word to as many people as you can. And I know this is a great show to be on, but I know some of your listeners know some of these other talk show hosts. And I'm not afraid of anyone. I'll get on there and I'll defend myself against O'Reilly or Limbaugh or anyone else. And I think it's an issue that should be dealt with by the national media, and hopefully we'll get it there.
Certainly. And if you have somebody like Hannity who claims to be the most aggressive of Obama's opponents, he should certainly put you on. Otherwise, he's pulling his punches, isn't he? He's not really getting to the bottom of the Obama question. All right, Phil, that's tremendous. Now, just remind us again the other lines of litigation that you still have, just so that we keep up with them, too.
Sure. I have a case still pending in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. That's on the issue of standing. And I have another issue in the D.C. Court of Appeals on the issue of the interpleader action for the retired Air Force Colonel Hollister, who is on ready recall from the president. He wants to know if he is recalled, does he accept the offer from a legitimate president, or does he turn down the order from an illegitimate or usurper president? And those cases are pending. One of these days we'll get a quo warranto up there. We're doing a signed campaign. We want to spread the word right now. Also, in passing, it's on my website. Unfortunately, I had to sue Orly Tates. She's a loose cannon. I usually don't go against other attorneys, but she's gotten out of hand. She's been illegally breaking the law by trying to bring me down. Makes no sense. She must be working for Obama or something through my paralegal, and she's taken my paralegal's name, date of birth, and social security number and spread it throughout the world. And that's in violation of state and federal laws, and I've gone after her. I actually have taken a default judgment against her. There's a law in California that says for every person you send it to, you're indebted to the victim being Lisa, to my paralegal, for the sum of $3,000. And we know she's dispersed this now over to close to at least 150,000 different people. So we're going after her hook, line, and sinker. It's a disgrace. The focus has to be on the birth certificate of Obama. Orly Tates has been just getting publicity, but for no good. And she should be disbarred. Let her go back to being a dentist, and people can check that on my website. I usually don't like attacking someone else, but someone like that got out of hand. I had to do that.
All right, so we're looking forward to those long-awaited oral arguments in the Third Circuit in Philadelphia in that question. Your original suit started at the Supreme Court in August of last year before the Democratic National Convention. And we wish you all the best. I urge everybody, go to Phil's website, make a contribution, obamacrimes.com, and keep in touch, and we'll do whatever we can to send out that press release on the outrageous action by this federal district judge, and the even more outrageous action by Eric Holder, whose contempt for the law could not be more evident. And of course, Obama is the one who's supposed to take care that the laws be faithfully enforced. He's not doing it. So very disturbing.
And Obama keeps saying how his administration is going to be so open and transparent. That's baloney, like many of the other things he's saying. And we just want the truth. And if he can show that he's entitled to be president, show it. But because he hasn't showed it, every day that goes by, I know that he's a fraud. This is the biggest hoax ever contemplated against the United States of America in 230 years. And Obama and Howard Dean and Michelle Obama should be held accountable for this.
Phil, there's also we would be amiss, I think, if we didn't mention it. This incident here, the white supremacist who showed up at the Holocaust Museum this week and committed murder, as far as we can see, this is the accused gunman James Van Brunn of Annapolis, Maryland. In my view, this is the kind of provocateur that you get from the intelligence agencies. They have stables of these people. It turns out that this character had been babbling on some website about Obama and his ability to serve as president, right? Is he an illegal alien? And you can see that there's an attempt to demonize anybody who asks for birth certificate or who brings up the Constitution in this case. You're going to be demonized as a white supremacist. And I think that's exactly where just the fact that you're doing this with your background and your track record, Democratic county chairman, Democratic state committeeman, Democratic party candidate for governor and senator of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, you are a refutation of this hysteria, which has been growing among the liberals on the various cable television networks.
Right, and I'm hoping then by my background to be able to legitimize this cause and these people that are all joking about it, then stop joking about it and ask Obama for his birth certificate. And when he can't produce it, then you'll be on my side.
Okay, wonderful. So you are the key man, and that's, I think that allows us to judge the wrecking activity of somebody like Orly Tates. In other words, people that are somehow trying to harass you, their motivations are among the darkest, let's say. Okay, so thanks very much, Phil. We'll see you soon.
My
see
pleasure.
You next week. And that's ObamaCrimes.com. You want to go there and make a contribution. And of course, we condemn the actions of this Van Braun, but again, you have to point out this is the typical kind of provocateur sent out by the domestic intelligence agencies to try to create different effects. Now, returning to the questions of economics, just to motivate once again that Tobin tax in California, we're told that in California the proceeds from the personal income tax are down 36%. And the corporate income tax down one half, down 50%. Therefore, you've got to get that Tobin tax, security transfer tax, passed, rush that into the breach, fill the budget gap, and maintain the fabric of civilization. We'll be back in a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C. Now, we have to call your attention to Surviving the Cataclysm, your guide through the worst financial crisis in human history, the one indispensable book for the current world economic depression. And when you get a fall of world trade by something approaching 40% in the first quarter of this year, and then indications that the fall is continuing with a leading exporter, one of the biggest world exporters, Germany, probably the best barometer, down one-third in the month of April. This means it is a world economic depression, and this validates the thesis of Surviving the Cataclysm, the first edition of which dates back to 1999, and the crisis around the Asian contagion, so-called, really a dollar contagion, the Russian state bankruptcy, the GKO crisis, and the long-term capital management hedge fund blow-up, which really told you everything you needed to know about how the world financial system was coming down. There were no subprime mortgages in 1998-99, not a big factor. But what did it was long-term capital management. This is all described in some detail in Surviving the Cataclysm. So I urge everybody to get a copy. We went through earlier in the broadcast a 9-point program for California, and of course with the exception of that maglev provisions, for some states it will be a maglev, for some states it might be something else depending on the immediate needs of the state, a 9-point program that any state can use to at least mitigate and ameliorate the consequences of this depression. All of that presupposes the general program of wiping out derivatives, stopping foreclosures, re-regulating markets, outlawing adjustable rate mortgages, seizing the Federal Reserve and issuing 0% federal credit for production only, and then the massive program of infrastructure, the 1,000 hospitals, the 50 to 100,000 miles of maglev rail, the 100 high-temperature pebble bed fourth-generation nuclear reactors, rebuilding the interstate highway system, rebuilding all the water systems on the model of that water tunnel number 3 in New York, the $5 to $6 billion one. That's just one city. Got to apply that everywhere. Fourth, federal emergency relief. You've got to protect your workforce. You've got to have unemployment fully funded. You've got to have food stamps, SNAP fully funded. You've got to have all kinds of social programs, Medicare, Medicaid have got to be fully funded. You got to increase the Social Security pension because that's all people will have. The 401ks are gone either through a deflationary crash or more likely hyperinflation coming up right now. So this is all discussed in Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Worst Financial Crisis in Human History, the long-awaited second edition as a paper book for the first time in history, made its debut in the past week. The first paper copies have shipped. If you bought one on the advanced order where you got your electronic copy from Progressive Press and you didn't get the paper copy, do contact progressivepress.com, www.progressivepress.com. You can email info@progressivepress.com and get your paper copy. But they should have all arrived, and the big question now is people who didn't order it and now should, because you get your paper copy right away. Order from Progressive Press. If it's more convenient for you to order from Amazon.com, you can order from Amazon.com. It's up there, along with my other books, that is to say, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, and with the relevance of that, we're going to go through in just a minute, because that's the People Power Coup or Color Revolution brought home to the United States. What Obama and Brzezinski and Steve Clemens at the New American Foundation think they're doing in Iran today, Friday, the 12th of June, 2009. So that's Obama, the Postmodern Coup. That's available at Amazon.com. And Obama, the Unauthorized Biography, Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography, also at Amazon.com. And that, of course, is the union-busting profile of Obama, the strikebreaker, the scab, the union-buster, using left cover. And that's the key in the tradition of the foundations from which he derives, right? His mother, an official of the Ford Foundation, worked for Geithner's father at the Ford Foundation, subverting Indonesia, bringing the apparatus of usury and microloans into Indonesia. And then Obama, of course, working for the Gamaliel Foundation, the Joyce Foundation, the Woods Fund, the Annenberg Foundation, closely allied to Bernardine Dorn, weatherman terrorist bomber from the 1960s, who got a MacArthur Foundation grant for the juvenile justice system of Chicago. Suffered the little children not to come unto Bernardine Dorn and Bill Ayers. So those are the three books, Surviving the Cataclysm, the most urgent. Get it from progressivepress.com and or amazon.com. And then Obama, the Postmodern Coup, and Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography. This is all indispensable reading. You cannot make sense out of day-to-day events without these three books in particular. And naturally, we also want to recommend Alex Jones's Obama Deception and the sequel to that, which is going to come out now in the late summer, Obama Deception, on the DVD front, one of the most effective documentaries in the political realm in many, many years. So now let's look in the brief time remaining, the international picture. A color revolution in Iran. Again, this morning, Friday, June 12th, Obama comes out and says, we are excited to see a robust debate going on in Iran. In other words, he thinks he's got a successful color revolution going. And the question would be to kick out Ahmadinejad, the mercurial and reckless demagogue, because that's, of course, what he is, and replace him with Mousavi, the less hardline and presumably Western subverted candidate, because they don't do this on the basis of humanitarian commitments. This is pure power. We noticed last week we had a seminar at the RAND Corporation led by none other than Zbigniew Brzezinski, attended by Flint Leverett, part of the Iran crowd, with his wife Judy Mann, I think her name is. So they're over there talking about the Iranian elections and how Brzezinski thinks that if you read between the lines, because Brzezinski is more cautious than any neocon. He doesn't come out and tell you even what a neocon would. But Brzezinski makes clear that Iran can become an asset for the U.S. in the Middle East. This is what's being offered to them. The grand bargain with Iran is you become a U.S. puppet and spear point and continental dagger in the same way that India has. And we'll use you against the Arabs, against the Pakistanis, above all, against the enemy to the north. And Brzezinski, in his appearance at the RAND Corporation, even talked about his famous meeting in Algiers, November 1979, which is written up in Obama the Postmodern Coup. It's funny, one publisher, a foreign publisher, considering the book, eventually published it, said, can you really prove that Brzezinski met with the Iranian leaders in Algiers in 1979? Yes, we can, because Brzezinski has now confessed this in public after Robert Gates called attention to it in a speech a couple of months ago. So this is now November 1979, the Algerian National Day, Algiers, Algeria. Brzezinski comes with Gates and Jessica Tuchman, I think, and her, in his entourage, and meets with Iranian Prime Minister Bazargan and, above all, Iranian Foreign Minister Yazdi. And he offers the continuation of military deliveries to Iran, what you might call Iran-Contra, against the enemy to the north, against the Soviet Union then and the Russians now. That's the goal. We'll be back in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. And our last segment, let's just remind people the ideas that I've been talking about are in the air. Terry McAuliffe, who did not win his race for Democratic nomination for governor in Virginia, did at least for about a two-week period put maglevs on the TV in Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, southern Pennsylvania, parts of Delaware. So people now know what a maglev looks like. That's progress, even though Terry McAuliffe went down to defeat at the hands of Representative Deeds there in Virginia. We've also got the Tobin tax, the securities transfer tax, being proposed by the French government, the Kouchner, to international meetings. And interestingly, the Republicans with Congressman Pence demand 100 nuclear reactors. That's a good round number. You've been hearing that here for several months. 100 nuclear reactors of the most modern type, pebble bed, high temperature, fourth generation nuclear reactors, the kind the U.S. can hardly produce at this point, but could if the contracts were there. This is proposed by Representative Pence of Indiana, I think. The problem is he says 100 nuclear reactors over 20 years. 20 years, Congressman, 20 months. Emergency, Manhattan Project, war mobilization to save the United States from economic ruin and thermodynamic collapse with the most horrendous morbidity mortality consequences for our population. 100 nuclear reactors right away. And, of course, the Republicans, true to form, want to somehow conduit this through the bankrupt banking system. They think that zombie bankers can be given incentives to build these nuclear reactors. It hasn't happened. It never happened. But good for you, Congressman Pence. 100 nuclear reactors is the proper number. But if you put all of these or many of these elements together, you get some approximation of the comprehensive program that we've been talking about here. Now, quickly back to Iran. Barkey thinks he's got a color revolution going. Time will tell. Mousavi, obviously dubious character. Ahmadinejad, of course, nothing good to say about him, an extremist demagogue. Of course, Ahmadinejad had said that he would address the everyday economic issues of the mass of wretched, poor Iranians, he hasn't done it. That's all of his verbal trash that he puts out is because of his economic failure. Now, there's a statement by the Revolutionary Guards, one of their top officers, saying that a color revolution or CIA people power coup is intended by the U.S. and the British, and using this guy Mousavi, and that what Mousavi is slated to do is once the election results are in, that he will say, vote fraud, vote fraud, vote fraud, get a group of swarming adolescents, rent-a-mobs and dupa-mobs into the public square of Iran and scream bloody murder that vote fraud had occurred. You know the drill. This is what put the fascist Saakashvili into power in Tiflis, Georgia, with the Roses Revolution. This is the Orange Revolution in Kiev with the fascistoid Yushchenko, international gas provocateur, and other places where it's been tried. Hasn't worked in some places, has been defeated. For example, the Cedars in Lebanon didn't quite work. Although Obama is also preening himself that in the wake of his Cairo speech, the Hezbollah victory in Lebanon has not happened in the expected form. The word this morning is that Mousavi is already complaining about irregularities, that his observers for polling places have been interfered with, and that the text messaging system of the cell phone network there in Tehran in particular has been interfered with. Now, this is quite clever. If this is the Pasdaran, it means they know what they're doing, because the text messaging is the way that the rent-a-mobs and dupa-mobs communicate among themselves. And undoubtedly, you got some powerful CIA servers set up there somewhere, maybe in satellites, that can reach these text messaging. So that's highly interesting. Of course, you know the idea with this stuff, right? You've got to have a color. The Mousavi color is green. You've got to have the appeal to youth, and in this case to women, because Mousavi's wife is apparently some kind of a passionaria for the women. The new look, this guy, of course, is not exactly a new look, but of course that doesn't matter, because you can get a tired hack like Yushchenko in Ukraine. Mousavi, a tired hack himself, but spruced up by the Anglo-American image consultants. You got to get your rent-a-mobs and dupa-mobs. You've got to get your swarming adolescents. You've got to get your slogans. There is a slogan from – it's basically, yes, we can, as far as I can see. And all of this, Obama obviously wants to tell you that his Cairo speech of about 10 days ago now was instrumental in stopping Hezbollah. Now, with Hezbollah, remember, it was Hezbollah plus General Aoun. General Aoun is your guy to follow in Lebanese politics, because this is the best approximation we can find of a progressive nationalist with reasonable policies. When Syria was invading, he fought the Syrians. Now he's allied with Hezbollah. The Maronite parties, the Maronite Christian parties that seem to have prevailed at least by a small margin in the election, are generally puppets of the International Monetary Fund, NATO, the U.S., and the British. So those Maronites are not the good Maronites. The good Maronites go with General Aoun, and they're in an alliance with Hezbollah, and that's just the way it is. So take a look at it. Again, the New America Foundation with Clemens had a poll, and their poll was not so great. They said Ahmadinejad 30%, undecided 30%, and refused to answer 15%. This is a New America Foundation alleged poll, right, the typical kind of thing you've got to have one of these CIA people power coups, coming in from outside of Iran by phone. So that you're not going to be able to get too much with that. What you really need is an exit poll. Maybe an exit poll will emerge with the CIA and the British running it that shows Mousavi wins, because you've got to have some reason to say that vote fraud has occurred. So that's pretty much the situation. Again, the entire lowdown on the CIA People Power Coup Color Revolution brought right up to date is in Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, the distinguished essay in there by Jonathan Mawat that goes through this entire thing, right? The Albert Einstein Institution, and it's generally now a common practice among the various U.S. foundations. Now, just a couple of words on Obama's Cairo speech itself. This was an exercise in hollow demagogy, and let's get right to the point. The main issue in the Middle East, in terms of getting a lasting peace and some kind of stability, economics. Right now, there is no common interest among Israel and the Arab countries and other participants. You've got to create one from the outside. That is economic development. That means making this area, right? It's the area where Africa, Asia, and Europe effectively come together. This, you know, look at your medieval maps and you'll see Jerusalem put in the middle of all the lands. Make that a tremendous international entrepot. Make it a tremendous rail junction. All the maglevs from Africa on the one side, the maglevs going into Europe and out into Asia on the other. Warehouses, airports, ports, container facilities, nuclear reactors, of course, for desalinization of water. Make a Marshall Plan for the Middle East. And this is the big thing missing in Obama's demagogic performance. Obviously, his narcissism and his megalomania take over, and he comes up with these crazy verbal formulations that mean nothing. There's no Marshall Plan. That's the missing element, is a Marshall Plan. We know that Gaza is ravaged, southern Lebanon is ravaged. Under Netanyahu, we've got 75% infant poverty in Israel. Iran under economic sanctions, Syria bombed to hell, Iraq war ravaged. Get a Marshall Plan for the region to restore normal economic life. All states, and I mean all states, including the Israelis, including the Palestinians, including everybody, must benefit. Then you have a possibility of a peace settlement. And this is exactly what Obama did not have. The main thing, the glaring silence, the crickets chirping in Obama's speech. Nothing on economics, no Marshall Plan. It's a failure. And we'll be back next week on World Crisis Radio. Don't forget to get your copy of Surviving the Cataclysm, now available for the first time as a...